This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello, we're the Kransky sisters on Joy 94.9. Hello,
and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. It's lovely to have you at the other end of this device, this hearing device. So whether you're listening to us on air on 94.9 in Melbourne, or on a podcast, or on the internet, welcome to our little history program.
Yes, we're radio without pictures.
And Phil, that's probably a bloody good reason, isn't it?
Well, it's good that we don't have pictures.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's television without pictures.
Well, it still works.
Yes. And after all, let's face it, we wouldn't make the top quartet, trio, whatever is in this room as in a beauty pageant, would we?
Well, thank you, Gordon. Speak for yourself.
Beauty is on the inside.
That's right.
Yes. So we should introduce ourselves, would be the right word.
But I've already named you.
No, you haven't.
But yes, I did. Not in order.
All right, then. I'm Chris.
I'm Gordon.
I'm Phil.
I'm Lance.
Oh!
We got another voice in the studio.
Oh.
I did say quartet in my little remark about the beauty of the place.
And can I just say something? There are three of us amongst us that I reckon have... You do all right on television. You look pretty good.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, he's not naming names, though.
Not naming names.
I'll just sulk in the corner.
Nah, there we are. Thank you indeed. Yes, Lance is joining us because he's done the Taste of Radio course here in Joy, and now he needs a little bit of practical experience.
That's for sure. A lot.
We're letting him sit in on the show and contribute a little bit as he sees fit, once to get his confidence up. And of course, doesn't need any encouragement.
Neither do you.
I can turn your mic off. Hello.
I'm not even going to talk.
We've been watching a video this morning with yourself on it from the year 2000.
I know.
At the old Joy Studios.
Oh, God. In South Melbourne. It was very, very spooky, that.
Nearly as old as some of the topics we're going to talk about today.
You have aged well, though.
Oh, thank you indeed. Yes, well.
In those 17 years.
There are reasons behind that. But,
I see.
I think a couple of the main reasons are that I'm volunteering, but secondly, I'm volunteering at Joy. And it's the opportunity to be part of a family, be part of an organisation and contributing and seeing the end product. Even every little contribution makes a difference. Is that not so, Lance?
That is for sure. I agree with you, yes. I'd like to contribute a lot more. That's one of the reasons why I'm here, to try and sort of...
But you have found a second family, haven't you? Especially with your other front desk peoples.
Yes. Are you talking about at Joy or...?
Yes.
Well, socially.
Socially, yes. Yep. Actually, where I come from, down in Frankston, the Out on the Peninsula group, they're a relatively new group. They have 150 members now, and it's a fantastic thing for the Peninsula. Yeah.
Wow, that's good. And I noticed that you go out lunching sometimes when you're not on duty here at Joy.
Yes, I go out with some of the members from Joy.
From Julia and Robert.
Julia and Robert. And sometimes I go out with Betty, our lovely photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And we...
You're a little gadabout, aren't
Jeff,
you?
We have groups in amongst groups.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Yeah, but we're all friendly. And
it's always good to go out with a photographer and see what develops.
Yes.
Thank you. Right.
Yes, yeah.
Coming up in about 10 days' time, and we're giving you lots of advance notice of this, is a regular occurrence that's been... mounted by the City of Melbourne Council since about 2008. And that is an opportunity for us, the rate-paying peoples of Melbourne, to go and look behind the normally sealed doors of some of our buildings. It's called Open House Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Yet and they're not actually houses, most of them.
Most of them are big business places like Parliament House and places where you can go in and do a tour around the Parliament House. I can remember when they were doing it one weekend, and the queue to get into Parliament House was huge, absolutely enormous, to get in and have a look around and see what goes on in Parliament House.
Well, I had a look through this year's list, and I noticed that 3CR Studios...
All right.
Were open, and 3RRR, I think, were open.
All right.
And I went through the list looking under J for Joy, and we're not doing it.
No, but it might well be that we can organise ourselves in time for next year.
Be a good idea.
Great
we
idea.
Could.
Mm.
Plus, any time one of our members wants to come in and have a look around, they're free to do so.
Well, they certainly are.
That's right.
Thank you for reminding us.
Can I just say, sorry, Isidore, if I just say, a couple of years ago, just in Russell Place, just around the corner from here, they opened up downstairs behind one of the bars there, and it was a power station. And it's got all the old DC power transformers and that, and it is very interesting. If you get a chance to go and have a look at that, it is sensational.
I would hope that whatever the transformers were cooled with is a safe medium. It's
they got very
oil, and it's not...
They used to use things that had letters like PCP.
Yes.
Which is not a health drink.
I tell you, one thing I'd like to see them open at some stage is the tunnel that goes between the old GPO here in Bourke Street to Spencer Street. There's a tunnel that used to take the mail.
No, it wasn't from the GPO.
Wasn't it? Where was it?
It was from that building, the Mail Exchange, on the corner of Bourke and Spencer. That's now a hotel. That was where the mail was sorted.
Just there.
And
just
then it was pushed underground across to the platforms.
So that's no connection to the first phone lines that we had in Melbourne that went from Parliament House to the Red Light District.
No. That was up in the back of Little... Collins, wasn't it?
Well, it was before my time. I don't know where the actual Collins, structures were.
But this is the beauty, isn't it, that we in fact can find out so much about our city by going and inquiring of behind the scenes in the 300 or so buildings that are going to be available for us to look at. The few times that you went, probably it was very interesting for everybody. They don't need to go back and see those people, buildings
again. You can go to somewhere else.
And that was when there was maybe only 70 or 80 buildings. Now there is 300. So the interested parties will be having less of an impact.
But the point is also you want to sort of think about the way they sort of demolish some of these beautiful old buildings just to put up these stupid high-rise apartment complexes and everything, you know.
So you reckon you should get in now?
Get in now before they wreck something else, because if you go overseas, it doesn't happen, you know. You can go to certain parts of London, you're not allowed to build skyscrapers.
True.
In Paris, you're not allowed to build skyscrapers in the main part of the city. You can out of the city, but you can't do it in the city itself. It's all actually controlled to a certain height. You can only think, I think it's four stories, isn't it? Phil, Chris, four stories in Paris?
Probably
I think it's about four or five stories as high as you can go.
And in the Asian countries, in their resorts, they don't like buildings being taller than the palm trees.
Oh, well, that keeps them very
and
small, doesn't
I think,
it?
Phil, you've got a situation you can report on in the US?
In Sunnyvale, where I used to live, nothing is above the tree line, which means as you drive along, you can't actually see Sunnyvale. Which isn't a bad thing. But, yeah, and then you get down the road to San Jose, and this is, well, they're not skyscrapers, but they're 10, 15 stories, and it's just not a good look.
Yeah, it just annoys me when you see some of these beautiful old buildings being torn down and just to put up these glass-fronted skyscrapers.
Yeah.
You know.
On the 29th and 30th of July 2017 is when the weekend has been named as Open House Melbourne. Now, there are self-guided tours and pre-booked tours, and there is limited mobility access, of course, in some of these buildings that have got the old-fashioned steps in
Well, they
front.
Weren't built for wheelchairs, were they?
They weren't.
And it's not just Melbourne. There's St Kilda with Luna Park. The Box Hill Town Hall is on the list.
Yeah.
So all sorts of places out of the CBD as well.
Oh, good, good.
I think the Hawthorne Tram Depot.
That depot is very, very old building. That one there right down by the river in...
So are the trams.
Yes, so are the trams.
Now, look, if you want to really go, you can go west and go to the Spotswood Pumping Station. Mm-hmm.
Is that part of Science Works?
Yes, I think so.
It is.
Yes. You get to see some classic poo.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Poo from decades ago.
Well, that was an article in the paper on the weekend. They were talking about what happens after you've flushed the loo. Where does it go? And they were talking all about the Werribee sewage plant. Mm.
I'll just a little story. When I used to repair computers and printers and such things, I was at the Melton treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
In their air-conditioned office, and I had
it would have been Melton.
Well, it was pretty hot. It's actually, that's why Sunbury is the hottest place in Melbourne. It's near Melton.
Near Melton.
Anyway, I'm working on this printer, and I have to clean the filter, and it is brown. All this brown dust. Oh. And I don't technically know what it was, but I know what I thought it was.
That's not dry. To know.
I don't ask questions.
Something dried in the atmosphere.
And got caught in the filter.
Yeah.
Thank you for being with Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. Gordon, Phil, Lance and Chris. Stay tuned because coming up very soon we'll be talking about the space race.
Mm-hmm.
People throwing rockets into the sky. We'll be talking about Rosetta Stone and how modern technology could have perhaps shortened the period of ignorance about what was written on the Rosetta Stone. And we'll talk about anti-cruelty and kangaroos and things like this. Stay tuned. There's more. Here's someone that we can sing along with. From Aqua.
Hiya, Bobby.
Hi, Ken.
You want to go for a ride?
Sure, Ken.
Jump in.
I'm a Bobby girl in the Bobby world. In plastic, it's fantastic. You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere. Imagination, life is your creation.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world.
Joy 94.9.
You're indeed with Been There, Done That. Chris, Lance, Phil, and Gordon. Thanks for being with us. Have you been interested or noticed the funny carryings on? Not so funny. They're
not
rather
so
serious, actually. In North Korea, they've been testing some of their new toys.
Oh, rockets!
Playing with rockets.
Yeah.
Which would be so nice if it was for celebration and not for attack. But anyway.
Or for other than wartime activities.
Yeah, they're not exactly launching satellites, are they?
Well, no, or they're certainly not exploring the rest of the world or the universe, are they?
Well, they're either. Not big communicators, really, are they? They don't have the internet. They don't like talking to strangers, which is the rest of the world.
Oh, they talk to China and they talk to Russia.
Yeah, but that's sort of backroom chatter.
There's a few people in that one, like when you've got the billions of people in China.
After World War II, there was a lot of science that had been created as part of the war effort, and rocketry was in its infancy at that stage, in the form that we currently know it as. And it was actually put to good use rather than evil use.
There was a bit of a race before the space race, and that was between Russia and America to see how many German scientists they could kidnap, basically. Yes.
Because the Germans had already perfected the rocket, hadn't they?
They'd got it pretty good
over London, and they were the buzz bombs that used to come over. And then just
the big difference, I guess, between the two teams, we call them that, is that the Americans were a big team and they shared the knowledge with the German-Americans shared their knowledge with Americans, whereas the Russians kept their Germans to themselves. And by the end of what we know as the space race, most of them had passed away.
Right, so their gene pool was in fact diminishing,
yes,
and the knowledge wasn't being shared compared to the US.
Yeah, German, so whereas early on we'd have Sputnik go up and then America would rush to get something up behind it, and that was the real race.
Mm.
By the time man landed on the moon, which we'll talk about in a second, Russians didn't have anything to send to the moon. didn't have any rockets that would do the job.
But then, of course, you had John Kennedy, who realised that the Americans had to be leading the race for rockets rather than letting the Russians do it, because they'd already put up Sputnik. And
it was an extremely embarrassing time for America.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
The Russians had proven the technology and sent up Sputnik, which was an artificial satellite.
And Yuri Gagarin was the first man into space, of course.
And the American rockets were blowing up on the launching pad.
That's right. There was a boom every
not a good look.
4 or 5 days at Florida, wasn't there?
Now, we don't know how many Russian rockets blew up on the launching pad because they weren't sharing that information with us. But it all culminated, I love that word, culminated, on Sunday, July 20th, 1969.
Yeah.
When a man called Armstrong landed on the moon. That sounds like a song.
This sounds like a song, doesn't it? But the funny part about it was we would not have been able to see that if it hadn't been for Australia.
And the Parkes Telescope.
Now, why was Parkes important in this whole exercise?
Because space is basically 3D, and you need to get at the rocket from different angles. And we just happen to be pointing the right way at the right time.
Oh, right, yeah, okay then.
So the Northern Hemisphere was looking at a different part of space at that particular time.
Ah.
So we had this dish which we had built for 800,000 pounds in 1961, I think it was finished. So they'd have been sitting there just doing radio physics and staring at the sky. And
yeah, but they were sort of looking for outside influences, weren't they?
Yeah.
And
NASA contacted them in 1966. And specifically in 1968, they asked to be involved with the Apollo mission for Apollo 11.
Yeah. And what was Apollo 11 all about? Obviously, there was 10 rockets before it.
Well, there weren't really.
No?
I think Apollo 5 might have been the first that actually had a launch pad. And one of the early Apollos blew up and killed astronauts. They were using pure oxygen for the cabin. And it would just take one little spark and it literally blew itself up. But the Apollo 11 achieved the goal that Kennedy set out in 61, I think, with his speech.
Yeah, somewhat.
And it was quite a deliberately worded, where they would send a man to the moon and bring him back.
Whoa.
By the end of the decade. Yes,
which he didn't see, but they got there within 6 months.
Hmm.
And it was an extremely risky mission. The technology of the 1960s had been pushed maybe beyond its limits.
Yeah.
To the point of when the capsule or the landing, the lunar module actually landed, it had like 3 seconds of fuel left.
Wow.
So their landing might have been a little bit bumpy.
Yeah.
Back then, were they talking about getting man to the moon and back again? Or had they, back then in the 61, were they considering actually having man walking on the moon?
Oh, no, the plan was to walk on the moon.
To walk on the moon,
but
okay.
But also to bring him home.
Right.
Because it would be relatively easier to just dump him there. And you probably would have got a volunteer or two, but they had to prove the technology they could actually launch from the moon and rendezvous with the capsule
module
and come
back
home.
Up into space so that the other part of this rocket could capture it. And
wasn't
it home.
That rather powerful concept that the president of the US actually carried forward compared to what's happening at the moment?
Well, he had a vision, Kennedy.
Yeah.
And now we have
a hotel operator.
Well, we have a vision. We see him nearly every night. It's wrecking my television.
Yeah.
But it's a completely different concept today.
But, of course, you've now got cooperation between the Russians and the Americans and other countries with their spacecraft
we've had that since the 70s.
Yeah, that's right. It's been floating around there all the time. They just set up a rocket with somebody on it and bring the people up there. They bring them back home and they put some more up there.
Yeah, they used to have a thing called Skylab,
which
was a converted Apollo capsule. And it was in a decaying orbit. And parts of it landed over Perth.
That's right.
Not on a runway.
No.
Little pieces.
Yep. But there, several rockets have landed in Australia, actually, out in the...
We're a pretty big footprint.
Yeah, yeah. but they seem to always land in the middle of the country, which is rather good. Doesn't sort of do any damage to cities or whatever, but you could imagine what would happen if something like that came hurtling out of space. Most of it would burn up anyhow, wouldn't it, as it entered the atmosphere?
Yeah. But I was just thinking of a major piece of space junk landed on Canberra, it might do billions of dollars worth of improvement.
Australia has had various experience in rocketry as well, because there was the Woomera rocket range, and they actually built a pad where the rocket would sit, and it had a special part built so that the when the blast from the rocket came out the end of the rocket and it was building up pressure to release and go skywards, all this hot air and gas and everything was blown out over the deserts.
Do you know what that cloud is?
No.
I learnt this when I was in Florida. I may show off for a moment. You'd have a huge rocket sitting there, and it's blowing out tons and tons of exhaust.
Yes.
At temperatures I can't even imagine. And those clouds of what we think is smoke coming out the side is actually steam, because the launch pad is flooded with millions of gallons of water to absorb the energy that would just burn a hole in the ground otherwise.
Oh, wow.
And we see clouds of steam.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought that was, you know, rocket smoke as a kid. But no, the fact is they cool the pad down.
Yeah, and so we've had rocket science, we've had the telescopes and radio control, and now the government is actually talking about setting up a space agency of our own, because we seem to have quite a few experts in CSIRO and some of these other places that need to be put to much better use.
Well, they're thinking about growing potatoes on Mars, weren't they? That was a big thing just a few weeks ago.
You just got to get Vasily.
We get the dinglings out of it, but then they've gone and they've found out what that red spot is in Jupiter or whatever it is. They've had a flyby. But that would never have been.
Potatoes on Mars would be good because it's so cold they would come back frozen.
Oh, we wouldn't.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Oh, look, we've got a little piece of music here, I'm sorry to say, that celebrates...
Well, it's space-related.
It is space-related. And I'm not sure exactly where it came from, but it's
Bobby Dimple and
the Lunar Ladies Choir.
And let's just say that people at the time were very excited about the space race and the achievements.
Indeed.
So they were very happy.
And you kids who've never heard of this before...
Sit down.
You'll never want to hear it again either. You're on Joy.
One small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. There's an American flag on the moon tonight, flying red and blue and white. There's an American flag waving on the moon tonight. There's an American flag, can't you see, sitting on the Sea of Tranquility. There's an American flag waving on the moon tonight. I'm not a bit neurotic, not a bit psychotic, oh no, no, I'm only patriotic. Gloriaski, what a kick, I'm a luna, una, luna, una, lunatic. It's an American moon, if you please, refer to it now as American cheese. Stars and stripes light up the Milky Way. Hey, Apollo 11 delivered our heavenly right to say, the man in the moon is a citizen of the USA. Stand up and brag for your grand old flag, waving on the moon tonight, waving on the moon tonight.
This Joy program has a podcast and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
Yes, indeed, this show does have a podcast and you can go back and listen to some of our earlier programs if you get on your computer.
We're available on iTunes.
We are. Mm-hmm. That's one of the places that people get all their choice of podcasts.
And when our website is feeling better, which will be very, very soon, you'll be able to go to our webpage for Been There But Done That and hear some of our recent podcasts. And after hearing that, you may wish to write to us.
That's a good idea.
Which you can do with your little email machine.
Yes.
And send it to beenthere@joy.org.au.
We'll take any messages, even we abusive like letters. What yeah. was that song that you played? Don't ever do that again.
We're happy to apologise.
After the event.
Yes.
It's very cute, really, because it was part of a review that was performed.
Yeah. But it does capture the feeling of the time, because it was extremely exciting.
Oh, yeah.
This was huge news around the world, and America's got it right.
That's right, yeah.
And by Apollo 12, they'd had rockets go up every 6 months or so, and nobody cared anymore.
Yeah.
Mm. So, yeah. What? You interrupt my movie to show me what?
Yeah. Well, it is the last frontier for man to discover.
Well, space. Well, the space, final frontier.
The final.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise, which was the name of one of the early space shuttles.
Yeah.
Moving right along.
Moving right along. Thank you, Phil, and thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Lance.
Let's go back in a bit into history.
People had been recording their history in various ways. Probably important things as well as mundane things like shopping lists or the crops that have been producing well that particular year and how many bags of grain were stored for winter, etc. And they would record this on various media.
Well, yes, like usually a clay tablet or something rather they'd have to carve into or something.
Or scratch it on a piece of slate.
Or cave wall.
Indeed, or even getting some soft clay, writing the words or the hieroglyphics into it and letting the sun bake it and...
There it was forever, basically.
There it was until it sort of got wet and melted away. But there was particularly one wonderful stone which has been named the Rosetta Stone. And it contained some hieroglyphics that no one could interpret.
You know why it's called the Rosetta Stone?
You're going to tell me, aren't you, Gordon?
It's pink. It's pink granite.
Right.
Yeah, it's got a very pink tinge about it when you see it. It's got this pink tinge, and some of the writing carved into it has got a real deep pink colour to it. Mm.
So you're saying roses are red, violets are blue.
Yeah, and this stone was eventually red too.
Ah, that was humour.
Oh, no.
That was read in not a colour.
But
term.
In red as an interpreter.
Readed.
There were two other versions of the same story, it would seem, on this particular stone. And it wasn't until some person had actually decided that it was the same story on the three faces that they could actually start to combine everything from all three versions and come up with interpretations of the two scripts that were not known, because the one script that was known was Greek.
Yeah, but it was ancient Greek. It was just a
ancient
bit different.
Greek,
and there was one bloke that knew how to read ancient Greek, and he finished up interpreting that and then realised that the other two languages on the stone were probably saying the same thing.
It's all Greek to me.
Yeah. But imagine we can actually do that these days with computers because of the brain power involved.
Well, the term today is there's an app for that. Whereas you hold your tablet,
yes,
not mentioning a brand name, over a text running an app that will translate from the text to English.
Will it really?
And it does it live. It's fascinating to watch.
Mm. So you can put sort of Chinese or something rather on a piece of Chinese paper and you could hold this map
and
this
read you the
tablet
English.
Over and read it in English.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Which would be great for menus.
Yes.
No, you just say number 36 or number 45. That's all you have to do when you go to a Chinese restaurant.
Or in Japan, you just go to the front window and point to the wax models.
Yes.
Although you do run the risk of getting a wax model for your dinner.
No, but the actual Rosetta Stone is in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. And it would be
a very valuable device.
Yeah, it's not terribly big. It's not
That would be London, Egypt. That we're talking about?
No, we're talking about London, London.
So the Egyptian artefacts aren't in Egypt?
No, they're like
there seem to be a few of them that have gone missing.
Like the Elgin marbles aren't in Greece.
Yes.
Well.
However, when you see what has been done by some of the rampant raiders currently in Iraq and Iran and these...
Blowing
all
up all those
is,
wonderful temples and
so
things.
So our English ancestors... had the foresight
to save
to
everything.
Preserve history.
Except if they're
weren't
Melbourne,
really
if they're buildings in Melbourne.
Okay. I'll go with that story for now. And
talking about Melbourne, have you seen in, it's around about Lonsdale Street, Latrobe Street, there's a church up there that's been pulled down and there were people digging around there artefacts.
The archaeologists, Melbourne Archaeologists Society, they find bits and pieces of what we were like living in the time, you know.
Right, okay.
They get shards of things. Yeah.
And they dig their work.
Yeah, they scrape it actually.
And brush it.
Yeah. But it's interesting what they actually find. They find what sort of food people were eating, the dishes and the broken bits of china and all
the bones, of course.
We need a volcano.
Why?
Because then you can get a snap freeze of what was happening at the time.
So therefore, we can be rather grateful that there's been some brains that actually sussed out. And what era are we talking about when the
1700s
stone was discovered and then the solution was considered?
1700s and then the 1800s, I think it was, by the time they did the actual inscription interpretation.
So they didn't have any modern tools. I wonder if they've actually gone back and used some of these modern apps to actually see if, in fact, the translation that they did was close to the mark.
Well, they'd have to put the actual interpretation into the computer first, wouldn't they?
Well, the programmer would have to have a working knowledge of ancient Greek.
Yes, that's what I'm getting at.
Which would be difficult.
Yeah.
These other scripts that we talk about, they were like diagrams and just different ways of communicating.
Hieroglyphics they were.
So
yeah.
At the time, it would have taken somebody who could think outside the box to look at that and realise that they're trying to tell us
something
in different forms. And to actually go and translate them would have been beyond belief.
Well, not really, because we've always had human beings that have had better brain capacity than other human beings at the time. You take people like Copernicus and those people that were looking at the stars and sort of saying that the sun went around the sun, not the sun going around us, and this sort of thing. You know, they realised these things were happening. And
whereas the guy in the street was out there worshipping the sun.
That's right. Yeah, but then you've got all the how they made the Iranians and the Iraqis in that area invented the numbering system and that sort of thing. So there's always been people that have got the brains of human beings developing as we go through the centuries to what we can do.
The numbering system took a while to develop because they started off with one thing and then they found out you could have two things and it got really advanced and they had more than two things.
But you know what they had real trouble with? Recording nothing, recording zero. That was a concept that was beyond them initially.
Well, how would you explain nothing? It's like infinity. How do you explain that to somebody whose name's Ugg?
You're with Gordon, Phil, Chris and Lance. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Stay tuned. There's more.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Gordon, Phil and Lance. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Our history program. We haven't had very much gay history on the show today.
I just wonder what they were doing all those years ago where we don't have any gay people born on this day.
There's
only a couple.
Speak to their parents.
There was Sarah Waters, whose birthday is on the 21st.
Yes. And now, what is Sarah Waters known for?
Tipping the velvet.
Oh. Excuse me.
Is that a euphemism?
Yes, it is. And it's also the title of her book, Tipping the Velvet.
And also one of her more recent books is called Fingersmith.
Yeah, the Fingersmith, yeah.
Now, yes, she writes lesbian novels. They're rather
lesbian themed. Yes, they've got other people in them, but there's always a lesbian character in who's the leading character in the book. And she's a very good writer. She's a very good author. And I think they've telecast the first one, haven't they?
Oh, a couple of her books have gone into TV production, that's for sure.
I've often wondered about gay books. How do you pick a gay book? How do you know it's gay?
Oh, usually
you have to use your gaydar on the book itself.
Yes. It's like that app for reading hieroglyphics. You've got to put it over the picture
read
on the cover.
Read the right signals.
And if it, yeah.
Comes out rainbow.
No, this is where our brain is far better than an app because we've got gaydar.
which works a lot of the time.
Yes.
Not all of the time.
Not all of
Sometimes
the time.
Sometimes it gets it wrong. But
well, no, that's more wishful thinking. It's yes. Where you wish you could turn Gato around and actually project it onto people.
And make them sort of think, oh, what's that happening to me?
Oh, yes. God.
It hasn't worked yet.
That guy on the train I saw this morning, he was good.
Oh.
He was really nice.
Oh, yes. Your Gato was, you couldn't turn him. Oh,
I think he was straight.
Yeah,
oh, Lance.
Lance had some eye candy.
Mm. Eye candy is the expression for the cover of those situations. But we were talking earlier on about apps and things on portable devices. There was the iPad and the iPad Mini, and Mini being small, I presume. But then there's a Macropod.
Macropod, yeah, that's an old kind of computer. It jumps around. I think it's called a kangaroo.
Oh, hello.
Oh, so that's Macropod
1.0.
The first one. Yes, that's the.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. Now, thanks for reminding us. So, what other people or creatures are in the Macropod family, Lance?
Well, I would assume
anything would be that has a pouch.
Wallaby,
Wobblies, did you say?
Wobblies, anything with a pouch.
Okay, yeah.
That's interesting. So the rabbit wouldn't be in that.
No. Wallaroos. Paddy melons.
Wallaroos, quokkas.
Quokkas? What? Quokkas, they're a WA type creature, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
They pose for selfies.
The first inhabitants of this country knew these creatures inside and out.
Well, they were food.
They were also weather protections because they would skin them.
Yes,
and take
fur.
The coat. When the Europeans came along, they adopted the language of the first peoples who were in that particular area as the first Europeans arrived.
Mm. It was called Ganguru.
Ganguru.
Yeah, it wasn't spelled with a K. It was spelled G-A-N-G-U-R-A, Gangura.
Oh, yeah.
Mm, and that's where they got the kangaroo from.
And the first American that saw a kangaroo.
What did he do?
He said, "Suffer and succotash." He was Sylvester the cat.
Yes.
And they opened this crate and this kangaroo got out and he thought it was the biggest mouse he's ever seen.
Thank you indeed, yeah.
But the funny part about it is that the when we were talking about language a bit before, I think the Australian Aboriginal race was one of the few races that never made a written history. They didn't write anything down. It was all vocal. It was all passed down from generation to generation.
Yeah. The Dreamtime stories, yeah. But what about their paintings, the cave paintings and that?
Well, that's their only paintings, but they're not writings. You know,
single object. They're not a continuous storyline.
And they would have told. They would have said to the white person that wondered what the hell that animal was. They would have said kangaroo, or however they said it in there.
But what about in song?
Time your kangaroo.
No, my boomerang won't come back.
Oh, right. Yeah, but
that's history.
That's because he didn't have a right bend on it.
I can't see around corners.
No. So back in 1770, on the 14th of July, the first European sighting of a kangaroo is recorded. Not first time they'd been seen, but it was actually recorded in a paper-based journal to indicate that they'd seen these new creatures that were standing on two big legs and were propped up on the ground with a big meaty tail. Fancy imagining what it was going to be able to do with you or to you. People would have been used to lions, and this didn't represent anything like a lion, so they probably weren't as scared of it. But, Gordon, have you ever seen a kangaroo boxing?
Oh, God, yeah.
Now, what happens there?
They stand on the back on their tail, and they lift up their back legs, and they can absolutely strip you apart if they get hold of you.
Whoa.
They've got one huge big thorny claw on their, and two smaller ones on their back feet, and they just go back on the thing and just slice you, and they can rip you apart. They don't do much with their small forearms, legs, whatever, but it's all from their back legs, which they balance on the back of their tail, and they just go whack. And if you've got to be very careful.
And what is it with the birthing process for kangaroos?
They're only about the size of the tip of your finger when they're born, and they crawl up from
the
thing, and they go inside the pouch, and they live there for probably a year or more.
And they latch onto the teat, which is totally incredible that they the embryo is such a small, defenseless little creature, but arrives at the end of it is this huge, big grey or red kangaroo.
It seems like a mighty inconvenient trip for this thing. It's like the navy bean crawling through the fur, looking for the right bit of mum.
And it knows where to go. Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's amazing.
That's nature. It's the power of nature. When we first landed here and took over this country, the most of the kangaroos were out way out in the back block, so they never got to them. They would have found the local animals around the city where they around Port Jackson. They would have got those all right, but there would be thousands more out in the open, which there is now.
And it seems kangaroos do enjoy each other's company too. Quite a lot.
Yes.
A bit like rabbits.
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
you see them in suburbs, the new suburbs sometimes, where they're building and they're taking away their habitat. And
we're encroaching.
Jumping down the street. It's a bit. I saw that once at my cousin's place in Pakenham.
It's the same. Well, it's the same with foxes. There are suburban foxes. I've seen foxes walking across in the Nepean Highway at Elsternwick. They're everywhere. Foxes apparently everywhere in the city. They're city foxes as well.
Yes.
Yeah, we had a fox before we moved into the apartment.
Did you?
And my little Eddie cornered him in the garage. Had no idea what to do with him. But the fox had crawled up on top of a really high shelf.
Yeah.
So, I called Eddie back inside, which he really didn't want to do. And the fox ran out and jumped the full-size fence without touching it.
Wow.
But they're such beautiful animals, though.
Yeah.
You really want to cuddle it, but have a feeling you might lose your eyes. Or worse.
It's about time for us to go. Thank you, Lance, for your contribution.
Well, thank you for letting me hijack your show again.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. He was a bit cheekier this time than he was first time.
He did
time.
It with that Sten gun that he's got in his pocket.
Yeah.
Hijacking the place.
We won't go there.
No, we won't.
So, thanks for being with us. See you next week. Bye now.
Bye for now.
Bye from me.
Bye from me.
And it's good night from him.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.